mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 465. I'm Adam and Mr. Popplewick. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Yay!
Oh, I see. He humiliates you by throwing harpoons at me. It makes a lot of sense.
Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
Carriages, carriages, carriages.
And the delectable Mary Lang.
Great protector of grafters and dissemblers. Save me.
Yes, you are, but what's your quote? And we have on the live feed coming through Laurie Nix, It's Hi. Alive. And Lillian Robin, Yay Hi. Debbie. Laurie Nix, Debbie has a squeaky kitty. That's what she said.
Yes, I have a squeaky kitty.
Have you got a new one, then? Have you got a new cat?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Robert Vench Jr. says, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Robert. Lillian Robin says, I am not complaining about you not starting yet. Well, you haven't started yet. And, well, we have now. And Laurie Nix says, Onslow. A bit stunt casting that was, by the way. I'm just going to say that now because I'll probably
Terry
forget.
Terry Miles says, hi, everybody.
Who does?
Terry.
Terry Miles.
Hello, why has that not come up? Has that come up on the 20 megabyte version?
It's up on the 20 megabyte watch party.
Woo-wee. Oh, I've got that one. Right, okay, Deb, I'll give you a little job.
What?
You can keep an eye on the comments coming up on the 20 megabyte watch party, and I'll keep an eye on the comments coming through on my actual feed. That's a good plan.
Stackyard.
And Kirby.
Yeah, that's the reason why I was suggesting you put things in the right place, because we were getting there were messages coming through from
Yeah, I know, I did mention them last week. And Kirby, your little job is to keep an eye on the 20 megabyte chat to see when Ian and Robert become available. Mary, you just have to sit there looking pretty.
Oh, I'm good at that.
Best job of all.
Quality.
Robert Vance Jr. says, time to get a roast beef sandwich and fries. Sounds nice. And let's get on with The Ultimate Foe, which is episode 13 and 14 of Trial of a Time Lord. Episode 13, written by Robert Holmes, and it's his last contribution to the
And history. Eric Sayward.
Well, it was Robert Holmes, essentially. Stop being awkward. To Doctor Who. Right, okay. So, is he in there yet? No. So we're back in the courtroom. It's a bit more, the courtroom itself is a bit more relevant to this particular story than it is to all the other ones. So we will mention it. And there's a long, long scene in which what I thought was quite interesting was the what, Lord? But it wasn't the what, Lord, was it? Who was it? And then in War Games, that chap. Who's in War Games? Who plays the keeper of the key of the what do you call it? Matrix.
The key of Rassilon.
The keeper of the key of Rassilon. Is that what it was?
Keeper of the Matrix.
He's the thickest,
but he has the key of Rassilon.
The thickest Time Lord ever, who couldn't work out that you can make copies of keys.
Are you talking about the actor James Bree?
Yeah, he was in the War Games. He was the one that kept on saying Lord.
Yeah, he was the security chief.
Security chief, that's it. He'd been in a quite recent story that we'd reviewed, hadn't he?
Full Circle,
that's it, because we talked about it in a similar fashion while Full Circle was on, I seem to remember. Yes, on this story he played the keeper of the Matrix. Again, pretty thick. I love the way he seems to be weighing part of a fish tank round his neck as well while doing the while playing the part. yeah. Anyway, so he gives his.
I wonder what's going on with that. That's very strange.
Yeah, he gives his evidence that categorically you cannot alter the Matrix or get into it. Now, what they never did explain, to be fair, and I'm going to mention this now because I'm bound to forget it later, it was they never really explained how the Valiard actually altered the Matrix, the recordings of what we were supposed to be watching.
They glossed over that, didn't they?
Well, it seems like just about everybody can get into the Matrix. So, I mean, he would, so if they all can, I suppose he can too.
Yeah, but no, you can get into it and have a fun time in this sort of world that doesn't really exist, that they've quite clearly, that's the thing they've been quite consistent with. It's almost like a dream world, isn't it, the Matrix? But yet it records everything, every memory, every happening in the universe, etc., etc. But again, they didn't explain how we were viewing actual events, and yet when you're in it, it's like a fantasy land. So surely that would lead to what they're showing as evidence at a trial, that to be potentially fantasy land as well, especially the fact they look into the Doctor's future. Just saying, it's a science fiction fantasy land TV show.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Are we really going to find inconsistencies in these last two stories?
I don't know.
I mean, come on.
Right, so so he delivers his evidence, and
the meat of both stories is how inconsistent they are.
The Doctor sort of says, well, surely the keys can be copied, and then for some reason Glitz and Mel turn up in coffins.
That was what my daughter said. What are those coffins?
Yes,
they're very similar to the you know, in that Tom Baker story with the android, what was it? Something about androids.
No, they're traveling pods.
Yeah. But there was a similar thing they traveled in that android story. Doctor and Sarah Jane traveled in them. Android invasion, was it? No, I'll just talk to myself for a bit then. What I didn't like was...
I don't remember that.
And I know she was given these lines before I get told off for dissing Bonnie Langford. I'll play the audio. Here we go.
As a matter of total disinterest, who are you?
Oh, Sabalom Glitz. And you?
Melanie. Known as Mel.
Known as Mel. Doctor. Known as the Doctor. Yeah, sorry. No, it's not just that, but it's this bit.
Are they all like you here?
No, not that bit. Sorry, the next bit. When she says about finding out with the court thing, this bit here.
Who here?
I don't know. Should we go and find out?
It's like an episode of Blue Peter. How's this vase made? I don't know. Should we go and find out? I'm going to get it across.
Spoilers, she eventually runs off with Glitz.
Yeah, all right. And then of course
I guess she likes him.
Yeah, okay. And then of course the best bit of the episode, of course, is they're all sort of bickering in the courtroom, and the master stands up for the Doctor and said, yes, of course, the Doctor's perfectly right that the Matrix has been edited, and I do like the way he sort of sits on high, sort of and mocks the Time Lords, before him and stuff like that. So you can see the Master's thoroughly enjoying this particular feature of the episode. And the Valyard, who of course now we find out is the Doctor. And I was thinking about this thing, wasn't it? But somewhere between his 13th and final regeneration, was it? This is supposed to be this incarnation?
No, it's between his 12th and
12th
last.
And final, yes. So therefore, it's one of those timeless child explanations where he's just had a... Because he's not the Doctor, he's the Valyard, so it's another incarnation. Somebody's going to say yes to me in a minute. So it's a bit like the War Doctor, but he's just...
Yeah.
Oh, God. Right, moving on. Or, actually, if you talk about he said incarnation, not regeneration, didn't he? So maybe it's one of what they call those? The timeless child incarnations. Hundreds of timeless child incarnations happened before the first Doctor came into it. You're all gone quiet because you know I'm right.
We're just intrigued. Yeah,
there's no reason to argue with you.
Exactly.
And the reason for that is because I'm right.
We're just hanging on every word. That's all.
Well, I'm just saying. So the explanation is now, because of the timeless child thing, you can fit the Valyard in any part of the Doctor's timeline. Mm-hmm. If him being an incarnation of the Doctor. And for me, it did make quite a lot of sense in regards to him being an evil incarnation of the Doctor. In fact, I wrote a Doctor Who story, which I sent to Andrew Smith, about a good incarnation of the Master by way of balancing things out. So don't, if anybody has that idea, if you see that idea anywhere, I had it first, and somebody nicks it. I did copyright that script, so we'll be sending the lawyers in. Robert Vence Jr. says too many writers in this story. Yeah, three. Yeah,
Robbie's trying to get your attention.
Who is? Yes.
The Valyard has been referenced twice in the news series.
Yes.
In the name of the Doctor, the Great Intelligence states that the Valyard is one of the names by which the Doctor will be known before the end of his life. And in Twice Upon a Time, Testimony tells the First Doctor that one of his future titles is the Shadow of the Valyard.
Oh, Kirby.
Master.
You're going to like this. Actually, quite interesting. I'm thoroughly thrilled for you to find that moment of interestingness.
That's brilliant, Kirby. More of that, please.
Yes. Robert Lansdowne says, "I hope my that's what my quote was going to be. The megabyte modem. Oh, that was your fault, Kirby. Hope my megabyte modem is fast enough for this stream." And Alan T. Butcher says, "The Just did a good Master story on Big Finish." Or they, I think that's supposed to be. I think Alan's Y key didn't work properly on that particular string of...
Why?
That doesn't bode well for his feedback.
No. Well, you may be reading it, Debbie. I'm not saying who's reading it, but you may be. I could actually stand her in this one. I'm talking about Mel's, I presume, on that one. Anyway, back to the story. I was just sort of trying to sort of... Oh, my video feed just stopped.
Just said hello, so I wonder if you want to try to get him.
Who did?
Robert.
Oh.
Okay. And while my computer's acting, the live feed, I've paused in a very weird looking way. Oh no, my computer's just locked up.
He didn't say hello on the.
No, he said it on Skype.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it funny how you lot carry on, the recording carries on, yet my computer locks up? See, it's amazing what Mats can do, isn't it? They can lock up everything apart from one thing.
It's amazing that. Your perfect computer has glitches.
Who said it's perfect? It's just better. That's all I said. And when do you think it's better? Right then. This computer is 6 years old. This computer is 7 years old.
Hello.
Hello.
Robert.
You can hear me.
Yay.
Yes.
Here he is.
My Skype signed me out, and then I couldn't remember my details.
That excuse is copyrighted by Mr. Reese Parton. Copyright 2012.
Which volume is that,
number 3? Volume 1, I'm afraid, Robert, so bad luck. So, quote, please, Robert.
You are elevating futility to a high art.
Nice.
Okay.
Didn't do the megabyte modem
that's
one.
That's the line before, there's nothing you can do to prevent the catharsis of spurious morality.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that.
Did anybody use that?
No, we did not.
No,
sounds like
did not.
Pip and Jane are just pulling garbage out
words,
of dictionaries.
Yeah. They do, yeah.
I'm patiently waiting for my computer to catch up with itself. At this point, I can't do anything. I wonder if I can get this to work down here.
You said your Mac is 7 years old?
No, I was exaggerating. It's 5 years old, this particular one.
Mine is 10.
And my
years
other Mac is 9 years old.
Mary.
Mine's 10.
Yeah. Welcome to everybody who's watching the show to the 20 megabyte How Old Is Your Mac competition.
I
said competition, I meant podcast.
I bought it in 2010.
Wow.
This is filling of the lowest quality. Oh, for God's sake. My pooter's stuck. My mouse is working, isn't it? Hang on, let's see. I'll go on my phone and see if the Live 3 feed's still going. It is?
Yes.
That's weird, isn't it?
It is.
It's doing everything apart from what I actually want it to do.
You've asked me to keep an eye on it for the chat, so
You're
I am.
You're a good girl. Yeah. You're a good girl. Right, so...
I'm
a bit
Debbie,
stuck.
Debbie and others have been saying hi back and forth on the chat.
Yeah, that's all we've been doing.
Oh, we're back. But I've got a message... I have got a message on the live feed screen saying that, oh, I know, it's because Robert sent a message through in the middle of me doing something and it's just locked everything up. So I actually can't see the live feed video now because of all that shenanigans. Right then, so we can... Ian, when will you be... He's probably podcasting, leave him alone.
Yeah, he'll let us know when he's ready.
Right then, Robert.
When he's on.
Robert, I'll just let you know where we are. The reveal
you're
of...
You're in the Isle of Wight?
Shut up. The reveal
no,
of...
No, I'm not on the Isle of Wight. Sorry.
I am.
The reveal of the Doctor, Master, Valyard, blah, 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 Valyard being the Master, has been done, and Glitz and Mel have joined them in the courtroom. And now I've got a funny spinning disc of naughtiness. Right then, so
you know,
moving
forward... about the Master reveal, though.
What did he reveal?
You know, the BBC actually showed a preview of the next episode, and they had the Master, so you could see that he was going to be in there. So that was...
Okay. Well,
I reckon they should have done that. Spot it.
Anyway, moving forward, of course, the Valyard does a bit of cringing and legs it, basically. Did he nick the key off? He did. He sort of nicked the key off.
Pretty useless guards, though, yeah. Aren't they? They just stand there doing nothing.
Jumped through an available portal into a very sort of weird, spooky environment. And the Doctor followed him in. And then so did Glitz. While the Master has a further conversation with the Inquisitor.
Brickyard.
Pardon?
Brickyard.
What?
I posted a link on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, where you can actually enter the Matrix. You can visit the Gladstone Pottery Museum virtually. Oh, there's a 3D exploration, which is fascinating.
Was it? Right, should we have a vote on that as to whether that's fascinating or not?
Well, it's
all gone quiet again. Right.
Is the tea on yet?
No, that can only happen.
Ian's ready.
When somebody mentions it on the feed.
Ian's ready.
Woohoo! Poor bloke getting harassed by you. Right then.
All of us.
It wasn't about by me. I didn't do one tiny bit of harassment.
No, you know, if Ian had been on, he would have said the stuff about the Valyard before I did.
So you're so pleased he wasn't on, weren't you? Hello, Ian.
Yes.
Hello.
Right,
hello,
quote.
Guten Abend.
He can't think of a quote. He's like me.
Oh, no. you say quote and then I heard Guten Abend. I'm like, that wasn't in the show.
that's just Robert. Know?
Matrix could have been manipulated.
The Matrix has gone weird.
It lies.
No, I didn't have one prepared, but I'll go with
just go.
That's a funny one.
Modem.
Yay! That's the one we wanted. Yeah. Well done. Okay, well, I'll tell you where we're up to. We're the Doctor and his little sidekicks are now in the Matrix, just about to meet Popplewick. Now, as I said, I was very disappointed that the picture that I posted on the 20 Megabyte group page that I took of Geoffrey Hughes, nobody put the sums together and realised it was a reference to Mr. Popplewick.
Well, there's a reason.
Which is?
For me. Huh? I had not watched the story.
Well, I don't think excuse is very good, because I gave you a really good clue. In fact, I put down his name was Geoffrey Hughes. Now, yes. I find it very difficult to believe you didn't know that Mr. Popplewick was played by Geoffrey Hughes.
It's been years.
I just thought you were. I guess I didn't tie it into the fact that this is what we were doing this weekend, but I just thought it was just like you, like, hey, look. I almost met Geoffrey Hughes. I'm like, that's really cool.
Well, I bumped into him. He
hadn't seen these episodes yet. So
well, before
I didn't,
that, you know, before that no picture was taken, connection. He was in front of me in the queue at Sainsbury's once, but I didn't actually speak to him.
Yeah, right then. I first met Geoffrey Hughes when my parents used to watch Coronation Street, and he was Stan's mate.
Yes, Eddie Yates.
Eddie Yates. That's where I first met him.
Yep. I forgot that he was in Keeping Up Appearances.
He was, yes.
Yeah.
And he was in
Onslow. He was
Royal Family. He was in the Royal Family. He was Jim's best mate. In lots of stuff.
And he tried to con somebody out of a watering can in this episode.
Oh, yeah. I was reading about that. Oh, yeah. Listening about that, yeah. That's funny.
Okay.
Tony Selby says he was always on the tape, always trying to get a deal and stuff. You see that guy's watering can over there? It's really nice. One of the prop guys has been watering can, and he's like, he was over there trying to get it off of him.
Right then, anyway, back
sounds
to
like he was a real character. Sorry,
so, yeah, so the doctor is meeting Mr. Popplewick, and Mr. Popplewick, I quite like that scene where he sort of goes from one room to the next. He's still sat in, well, it's a different version of Mr. Popplewick. That's quite
well
clever.
Done.
And
the first episode of these two are really good.
It is really good. And then
it was
towards the end of it, he just steps out the door into a wilderness. Well, a beach in Wales, by the looks of things. It does very much look like the Gower.
Is it Camber Sands or something?
Oh, it's in England,
yes,
is it?
Camber Sands. Camber Sands.
It looks to me of like the Gower. We went there on a school trip once. And then he gets grabbed by some hands and gets pulled down and said, "This is an illusion." Well,
you know that seems a bit spot when they show a low shot. You can see that it's not really a solid ground that he's standing on, if you know what I mean. Like it wobbles. Right.
There's a difference in colour in the sand too.
There is Alan Bay. Alan Bay do the different coloured sand. See,
it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
I was trying to do an Isla White reference then. Yes.
Adam, Tim Drury's just joined and he said, "Oh, it's the odd surreal two-parter, eh?"
Yes.
And
yes,
I just
is.
Wrote back, yes, indeed.
You know why he's joined? So we can play this tune. That sounds like Ian Jury's mention. So let's try it again. That's better. This is Tim Drury's mention time. Robert Vance Jr. says, "Hi, Robert."
Hello.
I presume that's aimed at you, Robert.
And that he's not saying hi to himself.
Exactly.
You never know.
Anyway, so the second part
maybe
of this,
maybe
the second
we're,
part
maybe,
of this two-parter,
he's just like, "Hi, Robert. Hi."
Features the Doctor sort of sinking down in the quicksand and Glitz
Popplewick could
racing,
say hi to himself.
Be quiet. Glitz pulling him out by the thingies and then saying he's dead, etc.
Are they called spats?
The thingies.
Spats, that's it.
The shoe guards.
Shoe guards, that's
ankle,
it.
Ankle armor.
And we see a very clever scene in which the Doctor rises from the sand.
That was freaky. That was very
freaky. I quite like the way...
It was so obviously backwards.
Yes, but it was good,
well,
Kirby.
I
like
that. One, they could have done
it added to the surrealty.
It did. I like that. Thank you, Robert.
His hands, when he comes up, there's a slight shift in his hands, but... Listening back to what Colin said about it is when they had to do that, he had to hook himself onto the platform so it would pull him under. So I think that's the bit where he's trying to, you know, pop himself in position.
Ah, there you go.
And also,
the hand movement makes it look kind of odd.
Yeah.
Also, he had to learn his line how to say it backwards.
Yeah.
Bad joke.
Yes. Yeah. Robert Vance Jr. said, "I got HP 3 years old." Oh, sorry, I got a HP 3 years old. What?
HP sauce.
Huh? 3 year old HP sauce.
HP sauce.
That HP. You need to get some more.
My power spec level is two and a half years old. I could look it up.
Sorry, what is the HP reference? I've lost my little road.
You just said HP.
I know, but what's that in reference to?
He's telling us how old his computer is.
Oh, it's a Hewlett Packard.
He's talking about the sauce.
Oh, God.
Anyway, Doctor Who.
Thank you, Ian.
Should I put the tea on?
The other thing.
Pardon,
time
Kirby?
To put the tea on.
Right. Anyway, so, yeah, the Doctor's fine because it's all surreal.
Stackyard.
What?
It's very obvious also that the Doctor's not
No. Mr. Popplewick. Oh, sorry, the junior Mr. Popplewick. It's taken you this long to start calling him Valiard names? You waited till now?
Oh, he's been going on about it as
the entire month.
So I'm waiting on the answer to this.
We've had Brickyard, Boneyard.
Knackersyard?
But he's waited till the last episode of the Trial of the Time Lord to pick up on these.
I did it. I believe I did it during the first episode, too.
Oh, God. Anyway, Robert Vance Jr. says, "Watch the show on VHS, the Omnibus edition."
Anyway, what I was trying to say was it was obvious that they moved, that the Doctor was not standing in the same place when they cut away from his little pit of water to talking to the Valyard.
He's in the Matrix. It's obvious the Valyard wasn't standing in the same place when he kept on popping up here and there.
When you could see all the little mat lines appear around him.
Oh dear, isn't that a shame? They're trying a very fancy bit of special effects.
TV show set in a macro universe.
You're picking inconsistencies in a two-parter full of inconsistencies.
Yeah.
I think what they tried to do with the special effects on this episode was extremely good. So shut your face, considering what we've had in Doctor Who all the years coming up to this story. Anyway,
Colin said that he really enjoyed working on this story.
Yeah, I imagine he did. It's quite interesting.
And he was kind of taken aback when he was fired.
Yeah, I should imagine he was. We'll talk about that later.
Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so basically the Doctor gets away from the Valyard and runs into a house which dematerialises because it's the Master's TARDIS. I did like the house reference. It was a shack more than the house because obviously one of the Doctor's TARDISes ends up being a house just dumped on Earth somewhere at the end of the last story that we watched in the 13th Doctor.
Plus, the Master uses a house.
Robert Vance Jr. says, hi, Ian.
Neil James says, who was the actual ultimate foe, Pip or Jane?
Very good question. Chris Chibnall.
Eric Sayward, I think.
In the making of documentary, it seemed as if Colin and Eric Sayward don't like each other very much. Do you know if that's changed in the 12 years since that was filmed?
I think Eric always thought he was a terrible choice for a Doctor.
His coat was a terrible choice. That's about it.
Like Eric Sayward, to be honest.
Does he go to conventions?
Eric, I don't know.
If there's when we have conventions?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Colin would have come if I'd invited him to FantasyCon last year. Anyway, so the Doctor gets rescued by the Master, and then he gets... He's in league with Glitz, so he makes the Doctor go into a catatonic state and marches him into the thing and uses him.
No, he's at a disco.
Uses him as bait to get the Valyard out because he really wants the Valyard. And then, and then he gets brought back into the courtroom and is sentenced to death. Uses Melanie as a tool for gaining his sentencing and does all this sort of very noble sort of acting and heads off into the Matrix for his execution. Mel kicks off in this courtroom and knees the keeper in the nuts to grab the key.
And I like that.
The Doctor
real
is
secure with that key.
The Doctor is wheeled away on a cart.
Most action he's probably seen in a while.
The Doctor was wheeled away on a cart.
He's the keeper of the key. I mean, he doesn't get an awful lot of attention on Gallifrey, I'm sure.
No,
he's a librarian.
He's got to regenerate. Maybe he'll regenerate into somebody who looks a bit like Colin Firth when he was about 40 or something like that. Anyway, so the Doctor is wheeled away on a cart and just stands in a noble posture while this is happening. Of course, it's all a ruse because Mel ruins the whole thing by coming in.
And the cart wasn't really there either.
It's not real. I know that, Mel.
It gets dumped on the ground.
So they go about trying to find the real Valyard, and then of course there was the megabyte modem thingamajig, and then they find there's a bomb behind the view screen in the courtroom.
A bomb
behind the view screen, and then of course the very funny scene in which in some sort of workshop, in which suddenly Geoffrey Hughes's face becomes Michael Jayston's face to adjust with a load of gooey stuff on it, and the Doctor pulls all the gooey stuff away to reveal.
How come he just stood there and allowed that to happen?
Yeah, but the funny thing was,
it takes 5 minutes to take it off.
It's just funny how even the suit was underneath it. So he pulls the mask away.
It comes off so fast, the old one.
Yeah,
and the wig just falls off. And he pulls the whole front away.
Master used to do that though too. He used to go, all come off. You know.
I did like that, but it was in the Matrix, so it's acceptable, even though it was a bit silly.
Yes.
I thought it was a good effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real mask, and they also he stood behind Pip and Jane apparently at one point. And they thought he was
the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did his he did it. I guess he does voices as well, and he did.
Jeffrey Hughes' voice.
Yeah.
Did you all know that? Actually, talking of Jeffrey Hughes, did you know that Jeffrey Hughes played the voice of Paul McCartney in a film called Yellow Submarine?
Yes.
Yes.
I knew you'd know, Debbie. Anyway.
I didn't know that.
You
I
didn't
that
know that.
Film.
I wonder if that's in a particular quiz book on the Beatles.
Yeah. That's available on Amazon and...
By someone named Adam Pearson.
It probably is. Yeah. I can't remember what questions I wrote for that book. But nice attempt to plug.
Must be due for volume 2.
Anyway, the Doctor has done something to the Master's TARDIS. So as soon as he flicks the switch, they all turn black and white and get thrown against the walls. A bit like what happened in the Rani's TARDIS. Do you remember that? In the
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Wasn't that written by the same writers?
Yep.
Yeah.
Strange that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then
the worst writers on Doctor Who.
But probably unimportant.
Yeah. And then suddenly the bomb goes off, but sends lots of weird sort of pixelated graphics around the courtroom.
Yeah, that was weird, that type of effect.
And then it feeds back into where the Doctor and Valiard are, and apparently the Valiard dies, but the Doctor's all right.
There he goes runs into the courtroom. Museum.
Runs into the courtroom and is forgiven.
And that was a bit sudden, considering how she was before.
Yeah, because the one before was an illusion. And during the forgiveness, of course, the Doctor is told, and we already know this because it was told in the previous episode, that Perry's gone off with Brian Blessed.
Time is an illusion.
Again, that could be an illusion.
Imagine that marriage, though. Oh, my God.
And then off they go, carrot juicing and carrot juicing and carrot juicing, while the Valiard has become the keeper of the Matrix, and he's very pleased with himself.
you realize that my quote last week was the same as this week.
No, I didn't realize that, and would I ever realize that, to be fair?
I didn't hear it.
Paid no attention whatsoever.
No.
Carrot juice.
Okay, right. Ultimate foe. Now, for me, I know you lot can hate the blimmin' thing, but I actually really enjoy it, especially, like Kirby said, episode one's really good, but episode two isn't that much worse. It is a bit sort of silly, but they're in the Matrix, so you expect silliness, and you expect fantasy, and even more fantasy, to be fair, and you expect surrealness, and it's very difficult to put surrealness into a program about a sort of shape-shifting time traveler who looks human that isn't human that travels around in a police box, so which is pretty surreal in itself. So I thoroughly enjoyed this sort of, and it's two parts, so it's easily digestible. And it was nice to get a final end. The only thing I didn't really enjoy about it was the obviously the Perry and Yukarnos thing, and it was a bit of a shame that we got the Valiard sort of obviously escaped, but we never see the Valiard again so far. But all in all, it was right, because it was two parts. You know, I think it had been longer than two parts, it would have been terrible, but I don't really mind it. And this, for me, has been a really good series of Doctor Who, this apart from the court scenes. It's been a really good series of Doctor Who. And it really does make me think, why the hell do they get rid of Colin Baker when it was so good?
Exactly.
So, it's all very interesting. So what I'm going to do now is ask Mrs. Melrose what she thought of it.
I agree with you on it, really. Two episodes was fine. It licked along quite nicely. It was incredibly silly, I thought, this last two, compared to some of the previous stories through this. I mean, it's Doctor Who. It's up and down with levels of silly. But I felt it was... It almost changed its tune to gearing more towards the kids again. It felt like it made that twist again from, we've been trying all this gross out makeup and, you know, all this stuff. Let's just go back to basics with Doctor Who, and let's just chase through silly things and do all sorts of things. And it licked along in a nice way. I really quite enjoyed this last two-parter. And It was just a good bit of fun. I sat up here in bed watching it on the big screen for a change, because I actually had this on DVD when it arrived yesterday, and it was such good thing to sit here and watch. And just
Ian's
just,
got a Blu-ray.
I bet, but
yeah. I've got a Blu-ray.
I thought it was the main reason, I think, just generating the word silly, was mainly the keeper of the Matrix. He really let the side down for Gallifrey, I must say. For someone to be like him, to be entrusted with such an important key, first of all, just to have it on a hook hanging off your chest, and then to just not acknowledge the fact that anybody can cut a key, was just... That just really didn't swing right for me. So when he got his just desserts from Mel, I thought that was quite funny. And I just like the whole idea. I really wish they had expanded a bit more on the Valyard. And obviously, as Kirby pointed out earlier, it's been mentioned that he's a future incarnation of the Doctor. We know it's coming. And I'm not sure if Big Finish really addressed that. Much as I'm a fan of Big Finish, I'm still very new to everything they've covered. I have really, really enjoying Colin Baker as the Doctor. I think he's marvellous. And yeah, I remember watching this the first time round and loving him as the Doctor, but then sort of as I've watched more and more different incarnations, different generations of the Doctor, I've really enjoyed him. I think he's been absolutely marvellous, and holding his own in the court scene has been fantastic. But this was the only story that the court scene really seemed relevant. So you could have done pretty much the whole thing without having to worry about court scenes in the other stories. But that was the way it all tied together. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good finale.
Thank you. Debbie, I noticed Ian Kirk has said, I have just had a phone call. They are short-staffed and want me to come in. Copyright Mary Billets Lang. Sorry, I nicked that one off you, Debbie. I just happened to notice it.
So. No, I just saw it as I turned away from the microphone, yeah.
Right then, Robert, what did you think of it?
I quite enjoy it. I think, yeah, Debbie hit on something which is quite noticeable about going back to the kiddie sort of way, and I think probably that's Pip and Jane Baker. They probably seem to think that it's geared towards kids, so I quite like the surrealness of it. It was as you say, with all the stuff on the sands and that. And what else did I I think the guards were pretty useless in the courtroom, that they let people get out and they let keys get stolen.
Yeah, but Robert, knowing the history and the mortality rate of guards in science fiction programs, I suspect they were probably a bit worried they were going to get killed off, but surprise, surprise, they didn't.
And they were wearing a lot of red too, funnily enough. But if you have a look at the guards, they're just standing there and just like oh, how you going, mate? Want a cup of tea? And not doing anything. So then they were right near the door. But I think
they didn't really stop anybody running out ever, did they?
No, they just stood there. It's weird. But one thing
it's
I just didn't
ceremonial
like.
Guards. They don't do anything.
Yeah, obviously.
We're here for set dressing.
But I think there was a few silly things, like the Doctor leaving with Mel and she's saying, we'll get you back on the exercise bike. And this Doctor is the one that's been through the court all the way along.
Yeah, so he hasn't been on the exercise bike yet.
No. Yeah. So I just... That had no logic to it if they'd really thought about things.
Yeah, this Doctor's just left Perry with King Icarnos.
Yeah. And I really don't like that as well. As I think somebody said, they could... maybe even Colin said when watching it, that they could have just said, it's the Matrix lying about her death.
Yeah.
Or just leave her being dead.
Yeah.
We don't need to have a round off.
Yes, kill Perry! Yeah. Kill Perry!
Yes.
Kill her again.
She's alive.
Leave her being with the king.
Yeah.
But it's enjoyable. It would have been interesting to see had they gone with Eric Saywood's script, or even if Robert Holmes had actually finished off, mind you, Robert Holmes had finished it off, I think probably he wouldn't have been up in his heyday type stuff, being so sick.
Well, there's plenty of hay in the yard, though, wasn't there?
Saywood would have done compared to. I know the
quality
script...
joke got get some. Oh, my God, my chair just broke.
I beg your pardon.
The screens!
Hang on. I think the chair's gone.
Oh. And you're Carry allowed you're allowed to have a Goon Show reference because you're not American.
I think my chair's gone. Oh, God. That's not fair. I love this chair.
Well, I'm just about broke. To watch it happen on live.
I love watching
feed.
It on the replay. It's like instant replay.
Oh, Adam, that looked really painful. You're right.
More painful for the chair and for my bank balance. That means I'm going to have to get an uncomfy chair in here.
Very, very rude, though.
Oh, no, not the uncomfy chair.
Get off of that whoopee cushion.
It's broke.
I just turned it into.
Yeah, you should really go for it then. Poor Adam.
Still, the most exciting time was when he had his cramp.
Oh, going on about the blimmin' cramp. Robert, have you finished?
Or his crack? Because I was here for his crack.
Well, crack.
Robert, have you finished?
Yeah.
I was going to say,
talking about the trial scenes.
Yes.
Really, they could have just left that for the first episode at the beginning and the last episode at the end, if you think about it. But, mind you, then you wouldn't get the charges like, you know, the dramatic thing of, the charge is now up to genocide, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes. But,
I quite enjoyed it. And it's sad that Colin, you know, just when he's sort of like getting his stride. I mean, I know some one of the extras on one of the shows he was visiting, he did say, and that's to a little kid asking him, you know, what would he like to do if he was in the TARDIS? And he would say, go back to his start. And I think maybe he regretted sort of having that cantankerous doctor at the beginning, you know, strangling Perry and all the bickering.
Not really. Nicola says in one of the extras that she actually thought that was, she doesn't have any problems with it, that particular scene, that it shows the doctor's change.
Yeah, the regeneration effect. I know.
And she didn't have any problem with the choking, apparently.
Yeah, she may not have done, but the fans did.
Right. Yeah, I know. I did.
But I just got the feeling that Colin, because a lot of people got onto it at that time, and the way he was feeling when that little kid said, you know, what would you do? I think he'd like to go back and maybe be the doctor that he was towards the end, at the beginning.
He did that in Big Finish, though, didn't he, Robert?
He's been redeemed, so, in the eyes of some fans. I didn't think he was too bad on TV anyway, so.
No.
It's just some people. Okay.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much. Alan T. Butcher said, the chair broke in sympathy with the broken plot. Now, I know I would normally at this point introduce Mr. Ian Bissett's view of this story, but I know Kirby is absolutely itching to talk about this. I was going to say something impolite there. To talk about this story.
Kirby, you should go see a doctor about that.
The problem is that coming after... Excuse me?
You can go see a doctor about that, about a rash.
The biggest problem with coming in after all the other people is that everyone's said everything already.
Oh, bye then. Right then, so we should move on to now.
My turn then, right?
No. This story is all right.
You know, I should do a capture of Ben's sound, right?
Actually, I enjoy it if I turn my brain off.
Oh, God.
It's a fun little romp. The first episode is better than the second episode. Try to ignore some of the weirdnesses of Pip and Jane. And I enjoyed the location shooting a lot, both locations. I'd like to visit that museum. Maybe someday I will.
Oh, God.
yeah, I know. I'm always saying things about visiting these locations because you guys won't.
No, because they're boring. Carry on.
What do you mean they're boring? To visit a location?
Adam, yeah. I think we should actually go on a Kirby tour of some of these quarries and things for a day, yeah. Just for a laugh.
What, the ones on the island, you mean?
No, there's over on the mainland. Apparently things that are like 5 minutes away on the mainland, you know.
Well, that'd be well worth it.
There are some things.
Drive all those miles, step into quarries and think, ooh, this is an interesting lump of rock, isn't it? Let's go back home again. Brilliant.
Pretty much.
I'm sure you could join Alan T. Butcher for a few things along the south coast.
Yeah, pubs maybe, but not blooming Doctor Who locations. The only Doctor Who location I'd be quite interested to go and see is the actual studios where they film the interior scenes and stuff.
I'd like to do the Cambridge tour.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tim Drury.
We'll do that then. I'm sure Tim could be able to... Oh, Tim Drury mentioned it, aren't they?
Tim always films that too.
Yes, contact Tim.
It's fascinating. Anyway, overall, yeah, it's okay. I don't have any real problems with the story other than the weirdnesses of Pip and Jane. And overall, I kind of
said overall twice. Is that because they were in some sort of like mechanical areas and they should be wearing overalls? Or
goodness,
I thought those were called boiler suits.
Oh, okay. I'll give you that one. But they were near a boiler, so maybe that's... I'll carry on anyway.
Anyway, as far as the entire season, this is the first time I've watched them all in order.
Yes.
Wow.
And I like it. I do like the entire Trial of a Time Lord thing, although they should have cut back on some of the trial scenes. Mm. I noticed that in this one, all the Time Lords are swapped out again. They're different Time Lords than in the previous story. Yes.
They're only supposed to be like living props. So I don't think that really matters.
No, it doesn't, does it?
No.
But I knew Kirby would watch that.
Yeah, so did I.
and notice.
Indeed.
Oh, and also, I noted last night that one of the extras on the DVD, I'm sure it's on the Blu-ray, is the show Open Air that's got Chris Chibnall, very young Chris Chibnall there, and the interviewer says she's never watched the show but tried to watch The Ultimate Foe and was confused.
Well, you would be though, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
If you've never watched Doctor Who before.
She also makes references to it being a children's show and all these people who are part of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. Where what are you, aren't you the long in the tooth for what? For liking this show?
Yeah, well, in our case, it would be a case for Chris Chibnall. Aren't you a bit long in the tooth for ruining this show?
Yeah. Actually, the things that he was saying about Trial of a Time Lord, I could easily put that back and say, well, Chris, I could say the same thing about
him. Exactly.
Exactly.
He's never forgotten about his own.
Yeah.
Also, in the making of documentary, they talk about Doctor in Distress, and there some several people, including Colin, say they don't like the tune. I actually kind of enjoy it.
It's just the lyrics and the singing.
It's a little 80s thing. Yeah. Does someone have a list of who all is in it? I mean, I can recognize Colin.
I've got the actual single.
I can recognize Colin. I've heard this,
but good Lord. For somebody who didn't have much to say about it, Kirby.
Well, you should, Phyllis Nelson turn, you should do my jingle now, then.
No. Have you finished yet?
Come on.
Are you done?
I'm done.
What? Ian, before you say anything, I have... Robert Vance Jr. says in relation to me talking about why the hell did they stop the show when it was so good... because Michael Grade wasn't a hoe. I'm not going to fill in the gaps on that one, but we can all guess what he was saying. And Alan T. Butcher saying they were the same Time Lords. They all regenerated. Good point, Alan. That's what we want on this show.
They regenerated between stories.
Yeah, they've been listening to...
You see, well, what happened was the guards were outside and they were supposed to stop them from leaning on the broken rails. And they didn't. The guards were just standing there. They're just like, whatever. And all these Time Lords went over the edge.
Yep,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's why.
I also noticed in this one, the He's Time Lords, in all the previous ones, they all turned to the screen together and back. And this one, they were kind of relaxing and turning at odd times.
I think they've worked out that it's probably not worth watching. Right then. Ian, rescue me.
Wow, that was ominous. You said Ian, and there was this huge roll of thunder outside the door. Like, wow, that's a hell of an entrance. I love this, kind of. It's always been a really confusing story, and I'll blame the Australians again. So not only did we have the confusing storyline, but the Australians, they cut the episodes, and then the Australian episodes, and then if we had to cut any further time off, you know, then... So by the time we got, I mean, because I saw this story a lot, but with bits and pieces added and video varying video quality and stuff like that. And the one thing I'm looking forward to, and I didn't want to watch it before we did this, because I want to see it,
fresh opinion. You know,
is the recut version on the Blu-ray.
So you mentioned the Blu-ray again there, Kirby.
Yeah. So that's going to be really kind of interesting to see how it all just plays through. But it is a great story because it does a lot of, you know, kind of the things I like about Doctor Who. Every now and then the Doctor should go back to Gallifrey and, like, show them that he's still awesome. And
it wasn't on Gallifrey, though.
Gallifrey for a long
time. No, it's on the spaceship, isn't it?
But it was on the space station, yeah.
Pedant much?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry, but the seventh door to the Matrix was on that ship. It's basically
weird,
Gallifrey.
Isn't it? Yeah,
what?
That's weird.
You can't have a hyperlink door to a macro universe. I mean, dude. It's powered by a megabyte modem. So, hush. I enjoyed that.
Six more episodes of Star Trek, and I can, Brad will actually hear this music in context.
Oh, you've started watching Star Trek? I didn't know you liked Star Trek. It's ever come up before. Anyway, back to my review. Since I gallantly let Kirby go before me. Anyway, I didn't interrupt and stuff. But yes, so I'll be looking forward to rewatching it because it is. It's all of the stories in this season could have been phenomenal, I think, but that's not the fault of Colin. Or Nicola, or any of the actors on the screen. Everybody did a fantastic job, even the extras. Well, most of the extras. There's a couple of that honor black person. Black man? Yeah. She was a bit pants, to be honest. No, I honestly thought she was a bit let down anyway. That was last week's. It's one of those things that because of the time that this was made, we didn't kind of get the full story that we should have got. We got this thing, which is kind of cobbled together and saved, but, and so it becomes this, and all it is, I mean, it's like, what did Tim say? It's this surreal episode. It is the whole Trial of Time Lord becomes surreal because of everything that was going on. We've got a sick writer who's, from what I've seen in Doctor Who fandom, heralded as somewhat of a god. So his name's on this project as well. Yes. And then Pip and Jane Baker, who, no fault to them, stepped in at the last second and were given no information and had to put the stuff together. And
it's
off to them.
Isn't bad, actually.
I mean, for 3 days. I mean, that's why it jolts a bit. But the sheer fact that they were able to put that together in that short space of time, you know, is you know, says a lot. There were a lot of people who were working on this show and cared about it. Unfortunately, there were some people who cared about it in the wrong way. And then infighting and BBC politics ruins the rest. But, you know, I love Colin Baker. That's why I'm here. That's why I got invited. Thank you, Robert, for inviting me. And, or at least inviting them to invite me. Yeah, I'll be here. Apparently there's screaming to be had next episode. it is fantastic, especially I'm just going to backtrack to the first episode of Mysterious Planet. That's how I remember the Doctor and Perry walking through that forest.
Yes.
That's that era to me is that little moment. And I did briefly watch a recut of that opening bit where they're walking through the forest, and it's just
on the Blu-ray.
Lovely. Yes, on the Blu-ray. Oh, have you got the Blu-ray, Robert?
Yes, I do have the set, and I enjoyed going through it for this.
Yes, I did too. I watched the behind the sofa and stuff like that, just to jog the memory, because you know, I've watched it so many bloody times, it's not funny. I had the tin, then I had the then I bought it out with the cardboard sleeves. And I've had like.
Yeah, I've got the tin. I've got the TARDIS tin somewhere. Yeah. They had a different picture on the bottom, didn't they?
I think mine's back in New Zealand.
Videos in it.
Yeah.
I suppose I should look up how much this thing cost on Amazon.
Should you?
The Blu-ray, Kirby?
Yeah.
I got the DVD for a tenner.
Well, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I know. It was lucky.
It's a good set. Well,
a lot of the, a lot of those are becoming fairly cheap.
Yes.
Basically, after the
shelf getting bigger.
I'm only going to be buying like one or two more of the Blu-rays. I really want Sylvester's first and Colin's first, and then I'm done.
Somebody said that might be last though, or one of the last ones to come out. And this is someone I sort of know, someone who's involved in putting together the things, or the.
Do you know, surprise, for this show, we've gone off on a tangent.
I brought up Amazon.com.
A tangent?
Talking about the Blu-rays.
On my main page on Amazon, it says, continue watching Bugsy Malone.
What? Now, that's a good movie.
There you go.
I haven't seen that for years.
Well, because
this guy's
hardest to
board, he's
going to ignore
us. You will go for a wee.
How far did you get, Ian, with your review?
I think I'm done.
Oh, you're
I
done
think
now.
I was done. Kirby kept butting in, and leading on about the Blu-ray.
That's my job.
Mary.
The Blu-ray's really good.
Time.
Well, I was actually very entertained by it.
I won't say that
I liked it or that I'd want to watch it again, but it was just so, you know, as they say, surreal. So I just kind of settled back and tried not to make sense of anything and just let it kind of flow around me.
Yeah, I won't be settling back. I'll end up on the floor.
Well, We hear that Pip and Jane Baker had to write that last episode. Part of that's because Soward had it totally written, but he quit before they filmed it, and he forbade them to use any of what he wrote. And supposedly his whole script was supposed to be burned up and destroyed, but I guess...
No, it's on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, copies of it have gotten around, so it wasn't...
No, you can get it on the Blu-ray. It's officially on there, along with Robert Holmes.
But so they had to start from scratch, but because there was already a cast, already costumes, already sets, everything, they had to like look around them and see what they had to work with. And the surprising thing is that they wrote an almost 40 minute episode that had to be cut down. And the word is that a lot of the humor was cut out of that. But it got to the point where they could get it down to 30 minutes. And then the whole continuity would be, if there is such a thing, would be destroyed. So then they got the official word that they could keep it at a total 30 minute episode. The surrealness of it and the settings and all that really took me back to watching the early 12th Doctor era, when he did so many stories in like Victorian and surreal settings. So I was kind of impressed, you know, that, oh, you know, this was carried forward into another Doctor's era. And I have to laugh at this, at him saying, well, there's, you know, there's really no royal jewels to protect. And I'm thinking, no royal jewels? What about, you know, the sash of Rassilon?
Is that a euphemism, for something, Mary, talking about royal jewels?
Strap.
Yeah, what did you call those?
The jewel strap of Rassilon.
The harp of Rassilon, don't forget the harp.
Yeah. I mean, that's a treasure that they have there to protect. And I was surprised when Mel opens that door and says, you know, oh, it's a what is it? The modem, the
megabyte modem. You should be about the megabyte bit, modem. Mary, to be fair.
Yeah, the megabyte modem. And I'm thinking, how would she even have a clue? But anyway, you know, that's just one more.
She's supposed to be a computer programmer.
She was a computer programmer.
Yeah, well, still, you know, it just was, you know, one more thing of the, okay, you know, nothing makes sense here. I read that right after the viewing of the last episode, it was announced that Colin Baker would no longer be, you know, the Doctor in Doctor Who. So I know that Colin Baker loves to go around at conventions and say, well, I never had a regeneration, so I'm still out there having adventures.
He did it was made by fans, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm doing really well.
They did did you listen to the Big Finish one that they did, The Last Adventure, Mary?
Yeah, I did.
That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I heard a bit of that, yes.
Excellent. Oh, my God, it was one of the best that they've ever done.
Yeah.
Exactly. And anyone interested, now that we're talking Big Finish, anyone interested in more in any of the ventures with the Sixth Doctor and Mel, there's only three with just the two of them. You already mentioned the Wrong Doctors last week. And then there's Ketch 1782 that was put out in 2005. And then the last one they put out together is The Warehouse, which was out in 2018. Other than that, Bonnie Langford only did two other big finishes. And that's
Fires of Vulcan, wasn't it? Fires of Vulcan, what else? Sylvester.
Yeah, with Sylvester, and she did The Life of Crime with him and Ace, and she also is in The Blood Furnace with the Seventh Doctor and Ace.
I'm sure that once she gets kicked off EastEnders, she'll be back doing Big Finish, because the actors need work. And Hev Pennant's back, so I've now got to be on my best radio presenter, what's your word, behaviour. So, yes.
Are there any audio adventures of Mel and... Savalon Glitz.
I'm not aware of Savalon Glitz. No. Any of
Kirby,
them,
you do realise we've got to move on to feedback at some point during this episode, don't you? Oh, it's gone quiet. Whoa!
Is Mary done?
I'm done.
Oh God, that means
Brickyard. Hey,
hang on, I'm just putting the cursor over your jingle, Kirby. Yes.
I just posted a link to a video, which I want to know from the people who have the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Is the Doctor Who cookbook revisited? Is this 5-minute thing all? Is that the entire thing which is on the Blu-ray, 5 minutes?
No, they have a cookbook, and then they have the extra one, which they do the Kip of Track. And
do you realise my chair has died for this podcast? You know,
it's interesting.
It was that exciting.
I'd rather like the show itself,
because it just won an award.
What, my chair?
Yeah.
the Doctor Who cookbook, the on the Blu-ray, the Doctor Who cookbook revisited. It just won an award.
Oh, there's marshmallows in the Doctor Who cookbook, Barney Charles?
Probably.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, I think Time and the Rani should have been Colin's last story proper. and then regenerate like the case for Davison. I can't blame Colin for saying no to coming on for a regeneration shot, but I think he did regret saying no. I think
yes,
I seem
he
to
did.
Remember him saying. Yeah.
Yeah, recently he's kind of recanted and says because he deprived people of them, like, nah, I would have just said, hey, hold on to it.
Right,
I'm
anyways,
going.
I think now we can actually move on.
I like Colin a lot. Colin's also the only doctor who's been in my car.
He's been in my car too, so there's a claim to fame too.
No need to go on about it.
My
Kirby.
Goodness, like Colin Baker's been in my car and Kirby's car. Wow.
Wow.
He hasn't been in my car.
Has he not?
Oh.
Okay. I found this in a cupboard. It's the Master's laser doodah. Isn't it cool? Right. Anyway. Right. So.
Butcher's been in my house.
Well, hey, is that a euphemism for something, Debbie? Said.
Okay. Am I hearing anyone say that he's been in bed with me?
Well, no, that's Paul McGann, isn't it?
That's Paul McGann.
Yeah. Well, we got close.
Yes.
You were in the lift.
Did you see the picture of Paul McGann with Debbie? Right then. Right. The feedback. Kirby put on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join a request for feedback. I think I got all those words out in a coherent sentence.
I used all those words.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. Could you use the words that the feedback people provided us with? That'd be quite good.
Anyway, Jefferson Liang says, you cannot stop the catharsis of spurious morality. Robert Wentz Jr. says, now if we move your hair off to the side, maybe you won't scream as much. With a picture of Colin and Bonnie.
So you still
also a picture of Sixth Doctor, the Master, and Glitz.
In the Master status.
Can I just say, Kirby?
I was trying to say that, but I had this weird echo.
Kirby.
Sorry, I'm
like
whispering at me. Sorry.
Oh, Kirby.
Maybe.
I don't know if he was whispering in my ear.
Maybe Robert should read these instead, since he wants to.
Oh, Kirby.
Anyway.
Am I muted or something? Kirby. I'm not allowed to shout or get into trouble upstairs.
No, he's just ignoring you.
I can see that.
Right.
The picture you posted of...
Sorry, what?
The picture you post of Colin Baker line looks like he's got, he needs a bit of a bikini line wax thingy done on him, the way the rocks are accumulating around his groin area, shall we say. Just saying.
Oh, what? Anyway. Robert Wiss Jr. says, has the Master quote, you know what real evil is? Wearing these tight leather pants and the zipper breaks when you got to go to the bathroom. And he likes these little jokes.
Oh, they jokes? Oh, sorry, Robert.
Are you sure we're not doing the Deadly Assassin again? You're Colin, not Tom, right? And then I have a picture from the making of Ian Levine saying, when John cast Bonnie Langford, that was the last straw for me. Which I recall
he
also
said it's the last straw on several occasions during the history of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Wish it would have been.
Why is he still watching? Which Robert Wentz Jr. says, so is he still watching or not watching? It's just complaining.
Yeah, just complaining, yes.
And then I make notes about open air with Chibnall. Robert Wentz Jr. finally.
This is slick, Kirby. This is what this podcast is all about.
I skipped my parts.
Good.
Except for Robert Wentz Jr. saying, I remember this. I think he didn't care for Pip and Jane Baker. Speaking of Chib.
And they probably, or I don't know how many of them are still alive, didn't particularly, or wouldn't particularly care for him, to be fair.
Pip and Jane Baker.
I think they're both passed now. I think.
Pip and Jane, yeah.
I think Pip passed either early this year or late last year.
Oh, wow.
I think late last year, yeah.
May I continue?
Please do, yes.
Robert Wiss Jr., my review of The Trial of a Time Lord Part 4. Well, the Master makes an appearance.
How did
he get away from the Ronnie's TARDIS and get back to his own? Creating the house reminded me of the Master's one from Spyfall. So the Time Lords are still using tapes. Where did they mention tapes?
No, when he puts the film can underneath the TARDIS?
Yeah, the Matrix tape.
The Matrix secrets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought the Time Lords would be more spectacular with something more forward future. The mm-hmm. Master trying to rule is getting old. That's why we don't see him again until survival. Robert Holmes adds horror element to The Ultimate Foe, and Pip and Jane Baker tried to carry it on. I wish Robert's untimely death... Robert, did you die?
I'm dead yet.
See what the real conception
I'm
would
not
have been.
Dead yet.
I'm not dead.
It just felt like they borrowed from the Deadly Assassin. J&T kind of chickened out and undo Perry's death. Undid.
Yeah.
Mel was calmer in this one and totable for once. What?
What?
That's what it says. I'm just reading.
I can see it.
Totable means, I think, like carryable, something like that. You know, believable.
Oh, is this English? Is that an English word?
Yeah, novel, isn't it? People using English on an English podcast.
We find out the key of Rassilon can be copied, and everyone seems to have one. So next time, we'll see the Valiard.
I've got one.
I've got two.
May I continue?
Yes.
I
keep getting interrupted.
What's wrong with that, Kirby?
Oh, not like you.
Yeah. Welcome to my world.
Generation coming up.
Yeah.
So next time we see the Valiard is the vision of the Dream Lord, Namie's choice. I don't think that's necessary. Yeah, I guess it is the Valiard. Also, did he regenerate like the Master did? Did he take over the Keeper of the Matrix body? Alas, poor Cullen Baker, this is the end of the road, with his last words being carrot juice, carrot juice, carrot juice. Well, at least he had success in Big Finish audio. Very average story to end the series. My rating is 2.5 out of 5. My rating for the season is 3 out of 5.
Fair enough.
I'll skip Ian Kirk.
Yes.
Except Ian, he says the A word in his audio, so he sent
a new one. I knew. I did see that. Yes, thank you. Yes. I think he sent that one to me personally. Neil. Neil James.
Where? Oh, I'm not there yet.
Oh, sorry.
Because Robert, Toby Violet sign too. He said.
Well, I'm skipping. I've already referenced the 3D computer model of the Gladstone Pottery Museum, but. Yeah. Since you mentioned it, I posted a link to a 3D model of the Gladstone Pottery Museum, which I would not have mentioned except that you happened to bring it up.
God,
it's Robert's fault.
Before the chair gives in.
Robert Haynes says, can I use my terabyte modem? I say, just don't use a terapin modem. That would be too slow. Neil James. The Ultimate Foe, The End of Another Era. The first part is chock full of exposition, but it does seem to make sense. The second part is more of a mess and doesn't feel like the spectacular climax it should be to a season-long arc. It's just confusing. Surprisingly, Anthony Ainley seems to know what's going on. That's cool, because I certainly didn't. Good to see Glitz again, but he doesn't work quite as well without Dibber.
Yeah.
The Valiard goes full-on panto baddie, which is a shame, as this story does have some well-paced placed moments of horror, the hands coming out of the barrel and the beach. Yeah, the choice of location work is a bit random, but Jeffrey Hughes does a nice job as Papa Wick. I do like the Doctor's rant about how corrupt and villainous the Time Lords are. Perry's fate is a massive cop-out, and the season ends with a whimper. Mm. Very excited for Sylvester McCoy.
How many stars did he give it?
He doesn't give it any.
He does. He's got 2 stars out of 5.
Where?
Maybe he needs to refresh my copy. Page.
Yeah, mine doesn't show it.
Mine doesn't show it. It's, after a whimper, it's got 2 stars out of 5. Very excited for Sylvester McCoy.
Huh.
Maybe you need to refresh the page or something.
Maybe I need to refresh the page because it's certainly not
that?
On mine.
That's happened to me before. Do you remember when I said you read out that he got stars out of 5 somebody? And I said, I can't see that. Where is it?
I could take a screenshot and show you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Just
refresh
the
page.
He also says, try saying this when you're here.
You're not the GBA!
There's nothing you can do with the catharsis of spurious morality. Okay. Robert Hayden says, try saying it sober. I just did. Neil James also says, I don't expect you to read these out, but here are my six Doctor rankings for anyone who's interested.
Well, we might as well do.
The Mysterious Planet, The Two Doctors, Revelation of the Daleks, The Mark of the Rani, Attack of the Cybermen.
Kirby.
What?
At the beginning of those things, he's got 3 stars for Mysterious Planet up to Attack of Cybermen, 2 stars for Mind Warp.
Not on mine.
I think you should refresh your page.
No, I think it's just his browser doesn't show certain emojis.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay, I am refreshing the page. Let's see. Oh, there's stars.
Oh, God.
Yeah, see?
That's interesting.
No, yeah. It isn't.
And let me go back a little bit here. Yeah, I know. See, it's all wrong.
Is it still
fault.
Sunday?
it's all right
here,
fault.
Debbie.
Yeah,
Debbie.
Yeah, Neil James gave it 2 stars out of 5.
Cream and sugar, or just sugar?
He gave it 2 stars.
2 sugars, please.
3.
2 sugars, okay.
Oh, 2.
2 stars out of
3?
5.
2. Sorry.
Give up caffeine, all sorts of things. I'm gonna keep going with a bit of sweetness in my tea.
His 3-star ones are Mysterious Planet, The Two Doctors, Revelation of the Daleks, Mark of the Rani, and Attack of the Cybermen.
Yes.
His 2-star ones are Mind Warp, Time Lash, I know, but it's hilarious, Vengeance on Varos, Terror of the Vervoids, and The Ultimate Foe, and 1 star for Twin Dilemma.
Okay, well, thank you, Kirby, for dictating those particular examples of feedback.
If only I had known that the stars were there.
Yeah. All right, then. Terry Miles says, feedback for Trial of a Time Lord, the last episode, or episodes, I've lost count how many, or Ultimate Foe. Mel, still in it? Alas, she didn't scream and scream until I was sick and started to be a real companion. Great to see Glitz again. Shame Dibble couldn't make it. I agree with that. I'm sure I have seen the reception chap when on the Isle of Wight and the other receptionists as well. R.I.P. Geoffrey Hughes. I suppose you would have met him, Adam, seeing as he didn't live too far away. Well, I did sort of not speak to him, like I say. He was in front of me in the queue at Sainsbury's once. Thought I would get that in before Kirby did. Pip and Jane once again, I'm not sure if you can say that, as J&T gave them both the story and they had to write the script around it. At last, the trial is over and we can get back to normal Doctor Who. Wait a minute. This is the last Colin Baker episode. I still hate Michael Grave for the 18 months gap. Now he strikes again and gets rid of Colin because he thought he looked silly in a coat. In the coat, sorry. Wait till the little Scotsman gets out his spoons. That's what she said. That would put a few more nails in the coffin. All in all, Linda and I thought it was a good story. The time in the court scenes were appropriate and didn't slow the story down. Great to see the master not wanting to kill the doctor and not being so insanely hell-bent on some stupid scheme which is bound to fail, which in fact it did. Thank you. Thank God Virgin BBC Missing Adventure Stories and Big Finish still carried on with the Colin Baker stories, proving that with a good story, he is a very good doctor. Oh, well, I'm off to get the drink. Oh, no, Linda, not carrot juice, carrot juice, carrot juice. Next, the return of the lethal trousered one or the Rani. Linda and Terry Miles, thank you. This coming through.
Can I just mention something because you mentioned about it?
Oh, yes.
It's funny that Pip and Jane Baker really get 3 stories in a row.
Yeah.
Because they've got Terror of the Bare Voids.
Yep.
Then they're involved in The Ultimate Foe, and then they do Time in the Rani.
And then nothing else.
Yeah.
We have this. Oh, no, we don't, because I got interrupted by Kirby just in the nick of time. Yes, Kirby? Kirby?
Wait.
I thought you were going to interrupt me.
What?
I thought you were about to say something. Oh, I beg your pardon, then.
I just posted my video of Sylvester playing spoons at Conca Cerberus.
Jeez. No, I wasn't going to say anything.
Hello, 20 McMack Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hi, Ian.
Hello, Captain.
The previous story was called Terror of the Vervoids. You can get some ointment for that. I was sure someone would have said that last week, so I did not bother. The resolution was to advance the creatures into autumn. Perhaps they should have used an American title pun. Fall of the Burboids. At the start of the inquiry, the doctor demanded to know where Perry is. He does not ask about Mel Brooks, I mean Mel Bush. He does not want to know if anyone knows what became of his granddaughter, Susan.
True.
Never asked for a prison visit from Leela.
Very good point.
The Ultimate Foe by Robert Holmes. Suddenly, the inquiry is the trial of a Time Lord. Luckily, they had a jury the whole time. The charge is herbicide, or shrubbery with violence. The Doctor and Mel think he should be let off on charges of wiping out an intelligent species because he saved the Earth. The Gallifreyans do not agree. Then he saves Gallifrey, and they let him off.
Yeah, good point.
The Star Trek holodeck was not available. The part of the Star Trek holodeck is played by The Matrix. The Valiard reappearing at the end was amusing, but the huge changes to the show after this story mean he was forgotten about. Alexa, who is Bonnie Langford?
According to Wikipedia, Bonita Melody Lysette Langford is an English actress, dancer and singer. She came to prominence as a child star in the 1970s, when she had a notable role in the TV series Jess William. In the 1980s, she played companion Mel Bush in Doctor Who.
Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Alexa, who is Bonnie Langford?
This might answer your question.
Alexa, shut up.
Melody Lysette Langford is an English actress.
Nah, it worked at my end.
Alexa,
oh, God's sake. Robert Vence Jr. says, looking forward to your McCoy reviews, Ian.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People realize.
Mary.
People think because I like Colin that I'm not saying that he does, but that I'm going to be opposed to, but yeah. Or he might not be getting at that at all. But
well, the coach still has another outing, doesn't it, in the next story? So that's a good thing, surely.
Yeah.
I'm feeling sad because we're beginning the end of the classic era.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling sad. We've got loads of episodes left to go, I'm afraid. Not sad at all.
The moment's been prepared for, Kirby.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Stop trying to divulge from the line we're going down. How because Mary's got
divulge or diverge.
Diverge then. I don't care. Do not deviate, as the Dalek said earlier on. Mary, you have some blurb from a certain Alan.
Alan E. Butcher, yeah. Okay, he says. You're off the hook this week.
I'm letting you off this week, Debbie, because you're not very well.
Adam is taking care of you.
Yes.
The Doctor versus the Doctor, or the Gallifreyan Eddie Yates cult unmasked. What is the reference to Eddie Yates?
See, he told you before.
Yes, he played Eddie Yates in Coronation Street in the 1970s.
Oh, okay.
Like one of his first roles.
I never saw that. Okay. Dear 20 Megabiters, the ultimate foe is, of course, a closely studied psychological exploration of self-harm and elevating futility to a high art. Obviously, the Valyard is a vehicle to extract self-harm, or to exact self-harm on the Doctor, which reflects the real-life self-harm on the program by the incongruent producer and script editor. The poorly explained and vacillating motivations of all involved are an exemplary showcase of futility. The Master, whilst apparently in possession somehow of all the facts, nevertheless seems totally confused as to who he wants to harm. It is possible that the program makers were trying to leave the audience in a catatonic state so that they were not in a right mind to complain. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that the difficulties experienced in the Colin Baker era somehow arise from the way the Doctor was played, either the actor or the characterization, they must be out of their minds, as their senior production team were making mistakes left, right, and center, while the on-screen talent were giving it. whilst the on-screen talent were all giving it their all. We also learned that the security chief of the warlords had infiltrated Time Lord society and become the keeper of the Matrix after successfully spending time also undercover in E-Space as Decider Nefrid on Elzarius. The common lack of intelligence of all these characters proves their commonality. All in all, the ultimate foe is a real mess. The production team had clearly taken leave of their senses going down the route of a trial, but to then leave themselves telling a confused and frankly vague resolution to that tale was a whole different level of foolish. It seems such a waste to get so much talent to expend so much effort on this, but to underserve them completely. All the supporting cast do a fine job, and Michael Jaston is a brilliant villain.
Yes.
Making Glitz an uneasy, untrustworthy agent of the Master works well. The Mr. Popplewicks are a very successful creation. Unfortunately, the particle disseminator has fatally affected the plot long before it appears, and nothing hangs together. One last semblance of sanity came as they pulled back from a planned cliffhanger ending for the season, with the Doctor falling unresolved into an abyss. Oh, yeah, I read about that. The survival of the Valyard shown at the end might have salvaged something out of this with a better planned sequel. This never came in the TV series, but we can always depend on Big Finish to pick a good character idea up and make use of it, and they have made several interesting stories with him. Yeah. This story is perhaps two episodes too short, as this season is over already, which is madness, and it may just have been possible to tell the full story of how the Valyard came to diverge from the Doctor and how he really hoped to gain from his attempt to destroy his earlier self. Then again, maybe not. Next up, Doctor Who and the Disastrous Start, or I believe the word rhymes with tetrap.
Yay, well done, Mary.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, and well done me for trying to save Debbie's energy so she can come on the show next week.
Yes.
Yay. Yes. Another few weeks and hopefully she'll be back on promptly.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Mar says Kirby is not going. Kirby not going to anything. It's the end of the world.
I was just about to say that's coming.
Doctor Who news.
The end of the world.
I don't understand.
Nor do I, but never mind.
It was probably something when we were all bickering earlier.
Yeah. Doctor Who news.
Bickering?
Yeah, what a surprise.
The Doctor Who feature, The Doctor Who Cookbook Revisited, has won the 2020 Royal Television Society's West of England Award for Best Production of Features and Factual Entertainment Programmes / Content of or Series. There's a little video of Janet Fielding and Sarah Sutton engaging in cooking. I'm not going to play it.
Yes,
but
I
if you go to
that, Ian made reference to this a few minutes ago.
Yes, yeah. I know, but it is on this page I'm reading.
Yeah, but Adam was trying to quickly shoo me away from it because he probably had it in the news and he was going to
Yeah, that's what I was doing, thanks, Ian.
You can paint me later.
Cosmic Basque issue.
Yeah, actually, it's sorry. Just lovely. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it is lovely to watch.
What, and the video?
They got together on one of the, you know, Skype or whatever, to watch the award and had no idea that they were going to win. And they won.
That's not really surprising, really, is it? Doctor Who wins award. Woohoo!
That doesn't happen. Actually, two awards.
All right. Doctor Who wins two awards. Woohoo! I'm posting the video on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. See, Kirby, other people can do it as well. Right then. So, Cosmic Mask issue 10. Issue 11 of Doctor Who Appreciation Society's e-magazine Cosmic Mask is now available to download free of charge at the Society's website. Don't you have to be a member of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society? I don't know. I should be a member of that. Well, in fact, we should all be a member of that if it's free. Just saying. Time Lord Victorious comic book series trailer. So there's another little video that you can watch if you so wish to. I won't share that one on the 20 megabyte page because I've done my job really for sharing stuff on that group. Doctor Who launches launches in BBC Nightfall.
Then I guess I will.
Yeah. And then we'll get back to 19th of August. So there's really not a lot going on unless somebody's heard something.
You forgot to mention about the animations for next year.
No, I mentioned that last week, didn't I?
No, didn't you? Because I think I posted it since then.
Well, no, mention it then, Robert, because if I haven't already mentioned it, there's nothing in front
of
me here.
You almost said
Kirby. What?
You almost said my name is Robert.
I said corroborate. Corroborate, that's right. Corroborate, collaborate. No, corroborate. Corroborate, that's the word. Corroborate, Robert.
What's this game?
I don't know. We're not talking about that at the moment. We're talking about what Robert was going to mention.
No, I was just going to say that the animations for next year are the Abominable Snowman.
Abominable Snowman, yeah.
And what's the other one?
I don't know.
Evil of the Daleks, yes. So
there's quite really a lot of Abominable Snowman. Abominable Snowman still available.
And speaking of, and going back to the first news bit, the other award that Doctor Who won at was for animation, and it was for the Macroterra. Sun and Moon Studios. Yes. So yeah, they got an animation award for that one. So
excellent,
lovely.
Right, lovely. Sponsors. Isle of Wight Heroes.
Who1.co.uk?
I think it is who1.co.uk.
IWHeroes.co.uk. And if you live in the UK, you can actually buy stuff and get them sent to your house from Heroes. And I advise you to type that into your address thingy on your URL and have a look around, because they don't just sell Funko Pops. They sell Dungeons and Dragons stuff, Warhammer stuff, lots of like gifts and geeky memorabilia and stuff. So have a look there. So much there.
What's
too.
The website?
And stuff.
And stuff, yeah. What's wrong with stuff?
Lots of stuff.
Who won sells stuff?
Things.
You know,
what's the website?
I've just blooming well said iwheroes.co.uk.
iw.heroes.co.uk.
No, I didn't say
iwheroes.co.uk.
Yeah, not iw.heroes. iw, as in Isle of Wight. Heroes.co.uk. There you go. Also, Christmas is coming, everyone. We're in September. So therefore, we can discuss the best possible gift you can get for your Doctor Who fan loved one. A Fourth Doctor's scarf specifically.
I've already
which
got
you can
one.
Get, of course, from lavazi.co.uk, along with some more niche items like specialist scarves, like what Debbie's got. You got a specialist scarf, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Yes, and
for a special person.
I'm very pleased to say that both me, Debbie, She Must Be Obeyed, and Izzy Wizzy Woo Woos, I'm not allowed to call her that, by the way. Have all met Meninda. Have all met Meninda at one of the Doctor Who events. So yeah, and they also do Star Trek, and I used to do Sherlock stuff actually. I love their Star Trek bobble hats. Now it is going to get cold soon. Their Star Trek scarves and bobble hats are really really cool. Did I mention I quite like Star Trek?
Here.
What?
It's already cold here.
Yeah, it won't be for much longer though, Robert.
No, true.
Yeah, you'll be needing your buckets of water to throw outside soon.
No, buckets of water to pour over me.
No, to quell those forest fires that come every year.
Yeah.
Right, whowon.co.uk also have stuff coming up for Crimbo, 2021 Doctor Who Annual, which I'd like to have a peek at, to be fair. I just want to see what the cartoons are like in it. Flying Dutchman and Displaced, which is a audio. I presume it's an audio book. Fury from the Deep DVD, cartoon version of a story we were talking about a few years ago.
Coming in a week. Which time, isn't it?
Eh?
In a week's time, it'll be out. On the 14th.
Yes, indeed. So these are all pre-orders. And, of course, the Reconnaissance Dalek. I tell you what, this is sort of distracting me slightly from something I did yesterday, rather out of the blue. I was summoned by one of my friends at work to do a photo shoot because they bought one of me portrait vouchers a while back. And I was expecting to turn up at this forest to do a family portrait shoot. And suddenly, as I'm driving up there, she bumps me over a message saying, "Don't laugh at us when you get here." And I just said, well, are you going to be in costume? She said, yes. I said, oh, my God. Anyway, I turned up, and they're all dressed up in steampunk costumes, these two people, oh, wow. Her and her friend. Oh, I thought, oh, whoa, this is cool. I'm so pleased to be here. So, yes, there's a video on TikTok of basically me arriving with them in their lovely costumes. So, and I didn't even know that she was a costumey person. So I said, why didn't you turn up at FantasyCon? That's a perfect place for people in a steampunk outfit. So, and, of course, a reconnaissance Dalek is a steampunk Dalek. You can also get Save Our Souls on pre-order, Sixth Doctor and Perry 1. Well, that sounds interesting, doesn't it? That's on pre-order. And Thin Time and Mindquake. All these big finish items are available on CD. Yeah. It's not having something tangible, isn't it? And, of course, there's a 13th Doctor 5.5-inch scale figure coming out with her and a red T-shirt. The one I have, she's exactly the same, but she's got a blue one. But she actually looks quite nice with a red T-shirt, to be fair. All these things available on pre-order, and obviously for your loved one, for Crimbo, which is not very far away, as I've said.
Very, very soon.
Yeah, Robots 2.
Right. Another ominous roll of thunder there. Thanks. Oh, Christmas is coming.
That's my stomach.
Christmas 2020 is a whole different thing.
The current items they're advertising as a Smuggler's CD, Time Apart, which is a Fifth Doctor Big Finish story, and Robots 2. They're all available now. Have a look at their website. There's lots and lots of Target books and other Doctor Who publications available. At whoone.co.uk. And they do ship internationally.
Yep.
Okay, then.
Railyard.
God's sake.
Brickyard.
Railyard. Yes.
Yard.
I did a little research.
Did you?
And Lavorsi did sell Sherlock scarves in 2017, but they only had 65 of them. Okay. So I'm sure they're completely sold out.
Probably. Yeah. Thank you for that, Kirby. So next week we'll be talking about the Time and the Rani story, featuring
Lord Inquisitor,
the next Doctor. But what before we go, I just start to think.
Lord Inquisitor.
Yes.
I just would like to bring up one of my friends on Facebook, Graham Baird. Not that kind of bring up. Dear Lord. It's the 34th anniversary of the first episode of Trial of the Time Lord today.
Is it? Bloody hell.
Wow.
30
years. Okay. What good timing.
God.
I know. It's like we planned it, right?
Yeah.
We did.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
Yeah.
I forgot to say something.
We were trying to sign off of the show.
Sorry, that was a really good joke, Kirby.
No. See, I just wanted to say, I mean, on the whole, what did we, were our expectations of the Colin, not you, obviously, Ian, because we know you love the Sixth Doctor, but what were our expectations of Colin Baker as the Doctor, you know, sort of better or worse than you imagined them to be? We'll start this, try and keep it brief, Kirby. What do you think?
Are you asking me?
Well, your name's Kirby, I'm pretty sure. Well, hang on, let's just check my notes. It's his name,
don't
Kirby.
Start with me. I really
keep it brief, Kirby.
I really enjoy the Sixth Doctor. There's some clunkers. Twin Dilemma.
Like
Twin Dilemma.
No.
But he's a really good Doctor, and I really need to go and start listening to some of his big finishes.
Yeah, good shout there, Kirby. Good shout. But I will say the question was. Were the expectations? So did he exceed your expectations, or you know, or did you think he was worse than you remembered him to be?
He was much better than I.
That's what I'm looking for. Thank you. What about you then, Debbie? Is she still there?
Debbie.
She's fallen asleep.
She's asleep, Kirby.
Well, she's not very. Mary,
Sorry, you're back. Everything mental on my computer. I've missed like the last 2 minutes.
Well, the question was.
It was just Kirby, so.
The question was.
It's obviously a question. What is it?
Yeah, the question was, does the Sixth Doctor exceed or your expectations from what you were expecting? Yeah. That's what expectations are, I suppose. Or were you disappointed?
No, exceeded. Very much so, because I tend to remember a lot more of the Sylvester McCoy stuff. My memory is mainly bright colours and Candyman and things like that. You know, it's the horrific nature basically of what's coming that I remember most. And I don't really remember very much of the Colin Baker era, but as we watched this, I realised that I actually did. And yeah, just he has exceeded my expectations. I just love the nuances he's brought to it. Absolutely.
Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, as I said, I had no problem when he was first broadcast, and I just found some of fans' reactions. I guess what they were expecting more of, more doctory kind of things, and I think maybe they're a bit off put by the start that he had, yeah. and all the bickering that he had with Perry. But okay. So my expectations have always been good for him, but just watching it back just made me appreciate things quite a bit more. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned before, like he got the role. I mean, he got the character of the Doctor straight away. Yes. You know, he walked into that role, and he's the Doctor. You know, he's the Doctor. Yeah. There was no sort of doubt. He's very, very good. And I'm glad he sort of got, you know, having been doing lawyer type stuff before he was an actor. I was glad that he got the chance to do some of that with the court scenes.
Yes.
Because he's, yeah, really loved watching him again. And I'm glad that he's still doing Big Finish, and we can enjoy those stories, you know, today. So it's good.
Mary.
Years ago, when I was first tuned in on our PBS station to Doctor Who and saw Colin Baker for the first time, I thought, this is a clown. This guy is nothing but a clown, because he was kind of, you know, acting dopey. He was acting superior for no good reason, because he looked ridiculous. So that kind of turned me off, and I never went back to Doctor Who. But then, you know, there was the, you know, rebirth of interest. After seeing some of the new Who stuff, it's like, oh my gosh. Then I wanted to go back and see, you know, some of the old stuff in retrospect. And I still wasn't that impressed with him then. But since then, I have been so influenced by listening to his Big Finish stories that now, going through it in context, as we have been doing, I'm taking my very positive attitude about him to these viewings. So it's not like I'm just, you know, my first impression now is so positive that I see that gentle, intelligent, fun side of him more than I see what irritated me when I very first saw it so many years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think we're all influenced by that to a degree. And we've just moved out of the Fifth Doctor era, where he was so laid back, so much in the background, Peter Davison was, that having, you know, this loud and kind of aggressive person be the Doctor is a refreshing change from that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's my thought about the Sixth Doctor.
Right, yes. Then, go on in. I know you're itching to sum up the Sixth Doctor.
Yes, well, it is interesting. I mean, it has improved, and even going back through it this time, when we first meet these characters and you watch, you know, any of the Doctors when you're a certain age, it pays to kind of go back and watch again, and that's what hopefully you at home, when you're listening to this, you've been going back through and rewatching along with us, and you get to see things that you don't see, or you didn't see when you were 10 or 15 or 20 when you last saw it. I was 14, 15 when I first saw Colin, and it'd probably be another year or two before I saw like the rest of his stuff. I was talking about Colin is that I kind of picked him a little bit on a whim, kind of liked the different Doctor, not the quiet meek one, but the more bombastic and, you know, kind of walk into a room, kind of Tom Baker-ish, walk into a room and just own it, you know. It's just everything improves with age, and your the way you view things changes as well. So I always encourage people to go back and look at things again, because things like Time Lash, I think we kind of all agree that, yes, it has its detractors, but there are some wonderful elements in there, and you can find those on a rewatch. And so, yeah, that's the beautiful thing about Doctor Who, is there's always more to find. And, yeah, my appreciation for Colin and for his Doctor continue to appreciate with the years, you know. So, yeah, it's every time I find a little bit more to love.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ian. Right, so like I say, next week we move into the Seventh Doctor era and welcome Sylvester McCoy to our series of reviews, i.e. The Journey. And, of course, we've all met Sylvester, I think. And it's going to be nice.
Yes.
Even though, as I've always...
We've interviewed him.
Yeah, even... Well, I have. No, you have as well.
I've got a picture of him on our podcast.
I think my interview...
I've got a picture of him looking like he's going to strangle me.
I think my interview was the best one, though.
I'll have to find that one. Sylvester looking like he's going to strangle me. It's a fantastic picture.
Yeah, he's a great character as an actor.
I thought I posted something in the group, and I can't find it. I
nearly got to say something about Sylvester, then, listeners, you see that.
Isla really loves Sylvester because he did that whistling for her at the con.
Yeah.
She still talks about that.
But I've always said, and I always stick by this, that... you have to have your favourites and you have to have your least favourites. And although I love the Seventh Doctor, he is my least favourite. So it's going to be, for me personally, going through this review of his stuff as to whether that opinion changes, whether I like him more, whether I like him less. And I know his Big Finish Doctor, like Collins, is better than the series Doctor. And I have to say, his performance in the Doctor Who movie, which again will be coming up in a few weeks' time, was sadly his best on the TV. But there you go. We've got that coming
sadly
up,
his best.
Well, it's sadly his last one has to be the best
the
TV performance.
Is my least favorite too, and even Big Finish doesn't really revive him for me.
Okay.
I don't even like his stories on Big Finish.
Mary.
Yeah.
I don't like the. I'm gonna be really really bad and say you want my least favorite Doctor isn't even though I haven't really seen much of the first two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like John Pertwee's Doctor.
Oh, okay.
What?
I love John Pertwee. I love Wurzel Gummidge, but I don't like that Doctor.
Everyone's allowed to disagree.
I
agree with Ian.
I do love the way Robert went, what? It's just as well you and Robert are quite a long way apart. I have a feeling he was going to thump you then, Ian.
Yeah. Well, that's the wonderful thing about Doctor Who, and the longer it goes on, you realise that it's the perfect show because... That means everybody can have a favorite Doctor or a couple.
Yeah.
You don't just have to choose one now. We've got a few
to choose from.
Just go, hey.
And an infinite number of previous Doctors we'd never met before he was the Doctor.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Anyway, Laurie Nix says, Colin was in the past my least favorite, but over the years I've grown to really appreciate him. And then she says, what Mary said. And then now he's pushed past a few others in my little black book of Doctors. So,
Inquisitor.
Like I say,
Inquisitor.
Yeah,
I found what I had posted. I lost it there for a minute.
Life makes a change for you to lose it. There you go. Yeah, Karen.
Time in the Rani, even though we haven't done it,
mm-hmm.
8 years ago I was on the Earth Station Who podcast where I discussed with Mike and Dave a Time in the Rani.
Splendid.
And that was the first time I saw it, which was interesting. I'm gonna listen to that again and see if my opinions change. And yes,
you should post that on the Facebook page.
No, yes, I wouldn't do that.
People listen to that. No, you wouldn't do that.
I
it'd be a bad idea.
I think I was the only person who semi liked it. I'm wondering if I'm gonna like it again.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? Laurie Nix said, Robert, slap Ian in the face with your glove.
Which Ian?
Well, it'd be you, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. There's a couple.
Yeah, there's too many Ians. It's like this common name.
Anyway, thank you. I'm going to try and end the show, Kirby, if you wouldn't mind.
I did mention 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast 8 years ago.
Thank you for that, for pointing that out again. Right, so next week, Time and the Rani. Hope everybody will be well and available for that one. That would be good.
Hopefully, yes.
And thanks for everybody for taking part in the show today. And sorry for everybody who's watching it on my own personal timeline. I'm going to probably continue to do that now. I can actually share it properly to the 20 megabyte page. More viewers. So until next week, thank you for listening, watching, taking part, providing feedback, all the things you do for this show. Bye.
Yeah.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Yeah, cry.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.